they see you owning the shop and they think, oh, it's all right for you, you're minted. And I think, I say to the boys that work for me, I guarantee you, you have more expendable cash at the end of a week than I have.
A lot of colleges need to have something in place at that point. Last 3 months of their course and go, right, obviously we'll teach you how to cut hair. Now we really need to set you up for the financial side of what comes next.
The client's expectation now.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Is incredibly high. I mean,
don't make someone look like an AI-generated picture of David Beckham,
I mean, that's
I'm
what
I'm
you
rubbish.
Get. I mean, hi, welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laban, and we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap, and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hi there, I'm Anthony Laban. This is the Noble Barber Podcast and part two. I'm here with Wes Jones and Dean Gleeson. Good first half, chaps. I like that a lot. In between, we were just chatting about your influence in the industry and where you're at. And I do think you're both much more relatable. You mentioned it in the first part to kind of people coming in or people at the start of their careers. It's kind of left me thinking how you feel about the industry in general at the moment.
Going forward.
And going forward, yeah, and how that works. You know, we've done a lot recently on about apprenticeships and the training and people coming into it and even coming out of their training and into working.
Yeah.
How do you two feel about...
It's kind of a bit of a funny point at the moment, isn't it? Where because of social media, everyone's trying to be famous instantly. So the kind of paying your dues and being an apprentice and stuff has kind of gone out the window, and it's something we've just discussed, but it kind of puts business owners in a bit of a strange spot as well, because we're not sure on how to target employment, self-employment, chair rent, commission, because where they're at in their careers, like they're coming in wanting to be famous, so they're not wanting to do the apprentice kind of work. So kind of in your headspace then, you argue against the fact that, well, do I pay you a wage? If you go down the route of, I'll incentivize you by giving you commission or chair rent, but it's not right for them because they've not got that career, they've not got that clientele built behind them. So you then end up leaving because you've got a shop down the road that's charging £5 less a day for chair rent, and it just becomes this competition on price.
Generationally, it's new for us as
well. Yeah, exactly.
Like being our sort of, our age in being business owners, we've probably gone through the same thing, like everyone up to, I don't know, late 40s, etc., of doing the same thing, working to a commission or working to some form of commission structure. For now, the world to be flipped on its head and everyone seems to be offering chair rent. It's new for a business owner to try and deal with, because you're like, well, how does this work for me? Like, how does this work for my business? Because it seems like the only one who's, you know, really having to deal with it is the business owner.
Yeah.
And it's the buzzwords that people are learning in college. They're most of the college, you know, our apprentice is a shop learner as well. And the people that she's in the apprenticeships doing the college with, they're all in shops and they're talking about renting a chair. And we're getting people literally finishing their apprenticeships asking for chair rent. Mm-hmm. And it's trying to get your head around it and go, how can you be willing to pay whatever a week for 300, 400 quid a week when you've not even built up a clientele yet? How does that work for you? Because as an established person, I can't get my head around it. And the other side of it is, you know, like you just said, shops are offering crazy money just to get the staff, but not doing anything as a shop to make them want to work.
Found
there.
Over the years is, I don't know if you've found this yourself, but when staff come and work for you, or they're renting a chair or they're on commission, they think we're millionaires.
Yeah.
But they see you owning the shop and they think, oh, it's all right for you, you're minted. And I think, I say to the boys that work for me, I guarantee you have more expendable cash at the end of a week than I have. Because I've got three kids, I've got houses, cars to look after.
How honest can you be though?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Like, I think frighteningly next year's 35 years of owning businesses. And I would say very, very often I was the last one paid.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, when it comes to payroll, you're like, right, everyone's sorted. All right, I'll wait till next week for mine.
Yeah.
And it's very rare that you actually are. There are lots of periods where you're not.
I mean, I was always employed. When I started hairdressing, barbering, I was employed. And that was just the way it was done back then. Like, I didn't even really know about commission and chair rent when I went through my apprenticeship, come out of it. It was kind of, we worked on this tier system where you was an apprentice, junior stylist, stylist, senior stylist, manager, whatever. And you worked up and there was different employment rates as you went. And it's kind of just transitioned over the years into this chair rent commission kind of structure. And it's like everyone's just following suit now. And it's, I think there is going to be a shift. We was talking about this at the fellowship the other day. And it's, I think there is going to be a shift with, I mean, you covered this a lot recently, but the grants aren't there for apprenticeships anymore, are they? No. So all that's happened is owners, like young owners like ourselves, think, well, I just won't take anyone on then because it's a big dent into your income.
There's no incentive. Massive deficit.
No incentive.
It's the hardest thing we've had to do. We've brought in a new apprentice. I've looked at it and I've gone, right, it's going to cost me this much. Mm-hmm. When you're getting something which is a small business, cost you that much with no real incentive other than, sounds horrible, someone to sweep up, clean up for you, someone you can obviously teach, and maybe, this is an absolute stretch, maybe will be a stylist for you when they qualify, because the stats show when people qualify, and it's very rare they stay with that shop unless they've got some crazy contract in place.
I think a little bit of responsibility does need to land on us as owners, and there's something I've learned recently is that we kind of just, you fall into the trap of like, well, I'm giving you a place to work, like you should just turn up and work. Whereas I think the responsibility of us needs to be, we need to create a place where people want to work, because you could get offered 10 jobs. If you're happy where you are, you're not going to go. And it's kind of like an unwritten rule in this industry that you don't poach people's staff. You don't.
I feel it's been forgotten about a long time.
It's no different to working up London and getting headhunted by, if you work for a bank, you get headhunted all the time. Getting headhunted isn't the problem. Keeping your staff happy is the problem. And I think whether that's employment, chair rent, commission, we need to strip it back to the core values and create in a decent place and an enjoyable scene for them to come to work. And then I think the employment model works again then, because people come away from the employment model because they think, oh, there's no incentive, because whether they do one haircut or 1,000 haircuts, they're getting paid the same. Whereas I don't think that matters if they enjoy turning up to work every single day.
Yeah. But surely there's got to be a figure in there somewhere which is too enticing for someone, no matter whether they enjoy it or not. Like I've heard figures as, like, talking commission wise, like 75%. That's hard to compete with, no matter how happy you are with your job. If you're taking 30 quid an haircut and you're getting 75% of it, that's hard to turn down anywhere. And you can create the best place you've ever, like, you can literally open up a place really trying to curate the best chair possible for that person to work in. But if someone needs to earn money, they need to earn money.
I think it's career goals though. Like if we looked at it from what we was talking about earlier, if yes, they're going to get 75%, but they're on their own. Like they're not going to get inclusive into like building that shop, taken to shows, doing shoots and stuff.
Whereas care, I think, though.
But yeah. I mean, a lot of people equally, don't really care about it. If we take it away and bring it back to you guys as the business owner, because as a business owner, you're down on 25%. Mm-hmm. That's the biggie. When I hear you talk about 75%, my brain goes, that leaves me 25%. I'm not going to earn.
It's gone.
Because a chair is going to cost me 25% of a turnover without any doubt at all. To pay for the shop, the rent, da 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 da. It's going to cost me 25%. If I get 50% of a haircut, 25%, half of mine is going to go and pay the shop. The other person's walking away with 50%. I'm lucky if I'm getting 20.
The problem is, I think, because it's becoming more and more popular, like, and obviously, you know, you expect your staff to know these things because they're in the industry. I said, one, it's going to get to a point where they're just like, well, it's money. And if they don't care about the stage work, they don't care about all that, ultimately they need to feed their kids and put, you know, a house above their head, then they've got to concentrate on that. And I think what a lot of people don't realise is, in my time in this industry, let's look at it on a commission basis. When I first started, everyone got 50%. That was just generally the way you started. And then you built up from there. You might have got 60% if you were lucky, if you were managing a place. In that, you know, that's been nearly 20 years. And everything that the business owner has to look after has skyrocketed. Everything's gone up. That commission hasn't really changed. Prices might have slightly increased, but the commissions haven't really changed in the sense of, you know, I as a business over the last 9 years, now from now to when I started, I'm probably looking after maybe, I'm probably paying nearly 100% more than what I had to pay before on like electric, gas, whatever else. but the staff still want to earn the same, and that price doesn't encroach on them at all. Mm. And that seems to be the thing. Like, and I don't know where it breaks, because everything goes up.
I think there's positives and negatives to each section, isn't there? Whether that's commission, rent, or employment. And it's like, it's interesting you say that from your viewpoint, employment is the way to go down it. But I think of our generation, it's all we've kind of known as industry owners, as shop owners, is chair rent or commission. And the one thing I found with chair rent, especially from a business point of view, it's a lot easier to forecast than commission, because I don't know, let's stick £250 a week on a chair. You know, for 52 weeks a year, or 50 weeks a year if you're giving them 2 weeks grace, you've got that money coming in. With commission, if they don't earn, you don't earn. So it's, yes, it's not costing you any wages, but you're not earning that money. Whereas with chair rent, what I've found is when you employ people, I know this comes down to how you run your shop, but you sometimes find that the passion for the shop's not there, because you think, well, it's not mine. Like, it's your shop. Like, so the cleaning kind of, you've got more control over it. The cleaning kind of ducks down. Whereas with chair rent, what I've found is they see it as they've got a business their within business, your business.
Yeah. No, I completely see that.
And it's the cleaning goes up, and it's their clientele is their clientele. And the chair rent for me works better, because on commission, and it's something you touched on earlier, commission, they just think, I'm giving away 50% this haircut or 40% this haircut. Whereas chair rent, it's the same as us. We pay rent every month, they pay rent every month, and then the rest is profit. So from an analytical point of view, I personally think chair rent is a better option to go if you didn't go down it. But
what about from like a client, let's say you've got three barbers, two of them are fully booked, you've got a barber who's doing a chair rent, he's got to pay, I don't know, up for example, 50 quid for the day. He's earned 200 quid that day, he don't want to do anymore, but his afternoon's booked out, he's got no one, he's got a free space. Someone calls up, yeah, I'm looking to make an appointment. As a business owner, you're like, oh, Jeff, let's call him Jeff. Jeff, you got the afternoon free. Can I book two haircuts in? Nah, I'm all right. Oh, okay. You've got no dictatorship over telling them,
no.
You know, you've got to look after that client. And then that falls back onto your business. And then that person goes, oh, they had space. I saw it online, but they said they wouldn't do it. Because Jeff has earned his money. He's like, well, it's actually my business. I've earned my
day's
wage.
That's what I'm saying about this positive and negative. Because the employment route, we've got control then to say, you're working till 6 o'clock.
We're
going to get this person booked in. So it's tough.
And equally, there are quite, you know, I mean, hey, I'm, you know, I still get quiet days. Mm-hmm. I've got a big clientele. I've got, you know, we've got four stores. There's always someone having a quiet day. And so, you know I take the hit for that. You know, on a chair rental, I would not have a hit. So I can really see the pros and cons. I always get, and like I say, it's only the way I run mine. It works how I do mine, and I've got no issue with everyone else. You know, my concerns really are the guys that are coming into it. Or I think this is the bit that I think chair rental does us harm, that if you've just qualified or you've just done a 12-week course, you've done all your intensive, you've maybe been coming up and doing some wild courses, gone and done some and this, you know what I mean? You've packed in your education, and really what you need is to be in a shop.
I think it's just
building up. There's not really a route for that.
No.
Point.
You just need to present the educational side of it. The fact of, you know, I spoke to a few young people and they just hear the names of it. They haven't got a clue what it actually means. Mm. They hear chair rent, they hear commission, they hear employment. In their heads, that you could be saying blah, 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 blah. Mm. Like, they ain't got a clue what it actually means.
But that is the main part. We're seeing 85% of store owners are chair rental, you know, and that's fine. There's only leaving 15% of the industry to kind of look after.
Well, the employment removes the stress, doesn't it? It allows them to, a newly qualified apprentice, employment will remove that stress for them to build their clientele without having to worry about paying them. I mean, I literally had, it's interesting we talk about this now, because I've literally had a chat with our youngest stylist in the shop at the moment. And when he has quiet days, his brain instantly goes to the, oh, I need to earn more money. Mm. And that's when you're then going to get, the brain's going to start looking for cheaper shops or additional jobs that are going to take them away from the shop. Whereas, quite rightly, like I say, if they're on an employment basis, it doesn't matter.
No.
And it's almost, you could put incentive bonuses and stuff in there then, and it kind of tailors it. But we're in this weird kind of limbo at the moment where not even half, 15% of people are doing it and 85% aren't. So to then offer someone employment is so alien to people now. They don't want to take it.
Owners panic as well because all they hear is employment and they think, we ain't got the money to do that.
Tax, holiday, sick.
No, it's the whole thing and paperwork.
Yeah.
A lot of barbershop owners out there are good, they're technicians in their trade. They're good at cutting hair. They're not amazing at running a business yet. They might be, but if it's early doors or they've not really invested into skills in doing so, they won't know the ins and outs of it.
We relate back to what I was saying earlier, that we treat our staff and we run our own business because when I don't run my business like I own it, I run it like I'm employed by it.
Yeah.
So it's then you kind of think, well, I don't know, you almost fall into this trap of you're treating them how you're doing your own shop. I effectively pay chair rent on my business. Yeah. So then it's kind of, that's all you really know. So it's, like I say, responsibility on us a little bit of kind of stepping back, educating ourselves on what is actually best black and white for the business rather than just, not what's easiest, because it's not what's easiest, but yeah, I think there is a kind of re-evaluation that might need to take place.
It just seems like there's a bridge miss. I mean, both of you would have had clients that you were doing before you opened your shops up.
Yeah.
You didn't just kind of go, oh, I've just moved to Leon C. It's really pretty. I'm going to open up a shop, paint Barbara on the front, open the door and wait for someone to come in. You didn't do that. No. You knew you had that core client and you hoped that if you had a nice base that they'd bring their mates and da-da-da-da-da. And you had your skills in place by then. What we're doing now, and it's only that young brand, it's only that youth area that are 2 or 3 years barbering, who are still kind of honing their skills, or even first year. They're having to arrive in a store and they're having to have rent, and they know they're the least experienced and possibly the worst barber in the shop. And they're trying to compete with everyone else who's trying to compete. And that's the bit that I'm lost with. And I'm interested from your view, if I was, you know, 18 again, just knock the fringe out of my eyes. But if I was 18, you know, I'd qualified at 18, I was cutting hair and I was employed. Yeah. And my goal was to kind of, you know, I wanted to get on the education team and I wanted to do this. My concern wasn't my money. I'd started my third year and I'd been given my third year salary. You know, I knew that I'd really look after my clients and they'd tip me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was that.
Yep.
And then I focused all my energy on becoming part of the fashion team and working in that aspect. An 18-year-old me now, I've come out of, I don't know, Lewisham College and I've done me 12 months. I've done me 12 months at Lewisham College and I can vaguely hold a comb. Sorry, any college whatsoever. Lewisham's just nearby. Or, you know, I've just done a 12-week course somewhere. I've spent $6,000 and I'm raring to go. I'm $6,000 down. I can't get a gig. Everywhere I'm looking at is chair rental. I can get a chair rental.
Yeah.
I start, say I find someone that's charging me £50 a day. Charging £20 a haircut.
Yeah.
I'm three haircuts in. I've got to do three haircuts.
See, that was
and I'm a tenner up.
Yeah.
I literally qualified. Obviously, I'd done my training through a barbershop, but now I had to leave the barbershop I was in the minute I was qualified because there weren't any chairs.
Right.
And I needed to work something out. I needed to earn more than what an apprentice was. And I instantly done the opposite. I instantly earned nothing because there was a place opposite me. They went, we either do commission or chair rent. And I thought, well, I don't want to pay out for anything without knowing full well that I'm going to get something back. So I worked on a commission. I think it was 50-50. Haircuts were like a tenner. And I was making no money. But I had there was no one giving me any information other than here are your options. Mm-hmm. And I think at that point, it would be nice for, again, it's always nice if someone reaches out and tells you what you need to hear. But if you're also not asking the right questions, you're not going to get any answers at all. So I just thought maybe that's the case. And I think now for people who are leaving these colleges, whether they've spent money to do it at a later date or they are young and they've gone through college organic way, they've done their apprenticeship, and now they need to get onto a shop floor, they need to find out as much about the options because 9 times out of 10, the barbershop owner is going to offer the option that is best for them as a barbershop owner.
I think lifestyles massively impacted it as well, though, because when you're employed, that's all you're earning that week. So we're kind of in this generation now where everyone wants more. They want a faster car. They want a bigger house. They want a nicer watch. They want fancier clothes. And it's, I think what is attractive to people and why a lot of people want to go on chair rent or commission is because it's kind of limitless to what they can earn, but they take for granted, like you say, that they haven't got that clientele there. But in their head, they think, I'm only giving X amount over if I, so the rest the is profit for me. There. So yeah.
It's a bit of hope, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's the bit, I think, you know, we're seeing huge numbers, you know, you see the numbers of people going on courses, you see the number of people going into colleges. We're starting to see for the first time those numbers are dipping. Mm-hmm. But at the same point, where I'm speaking to so many people who just can't get up, where'd you get your barbers from? Because we're not, there's not that nurture point. It's not the point, you know, I mean, from my point of view, they've done 100 haircuts at one of the 12-week courses. There are 100 haircuts in. Yeah. You know, if I can get them through another 100, I'm fairly sure they're really workable barbers.
Yeah.
But there's not an incentive for a lot of people to take that person on.
No.
What's the cost?
And carry on training them. You know, an apprentice is going to cost you £12,800 a year in wages. You have to employ them.
Yeah.
£12,800 a year. And if they're not an apprentice and you're going to do some training with them, you're nearer £23,000 a year. Yeah. So they're coming in, and certainly for 3 months, they're on the equivalent of £24,000 a year.
And that's what you're finding is people were trying to kind of bypass that newly qualified stage and have someone who's kind of established, who's building the clientele, because like Adam touched on it in the last interview, that they leave college qualified but not necessarily good at cutting hair. And that's when we need to then take them on and grow them into a successful barber. And it's like you reeled the figures off there. That's what people look at. They go, bloody hell, for me to take this person on, it's going to cost me £23,000. And that's when you go down the route of thinking, well, if I wait 6 months, I can get someone who's looking for a job but knows how to cut hair. But then it's the wrong way to go about it. But it's the kind of situation we're in now.
But we still got this 18-year-old who's just come out of college or coursework who's still trying to get a gig.
Yeah. I feel like the colleges need to have something in place at that point, let's say the last 3 months of their course, and go, right, obviously we're teaching you how to cut hair. Now we really need to set you up for the financial side of what comes next. Because we've had people approach us and they haven't got a clue. Literally don't know what anything means. And they just think, well, all I want to do is cut hair and earn some money. Mm. They don't think about, you know, all the ins and outs of it. Because I don't think anyone's really telling them until it's too late, until they're in a position where they're either already on a chair.
Even earlier than that, though, I talked to the colleges and they're saying that they can't find placements. You know, you're talking about Adam Sloan. He's saying that, you know, he's having to turn people away because he can't get them a placement anywhere because no one wants to spend that time. And I kind of understand that. Yeah. I'm not arguing with it. But we do seem to have got locked into this cycle. And as two people who've spent huge amounts of their time educating, it must be so frustrating.
Yeah, and it's interesting because if I look at my early career, I've done the complete opposite to what I do now in my own shop.
Mm.
Both shops I started at when I first started training were employed. Both of them went through an apprentice. They went junior stylist, senior stylist, and you work through the rank. It was always employed. It was only when I come away from, and it kind of highlights it, I think hairdressing, there's a lot more employment. Barbering, we're kind of very chair rent commission based, because that was when my transition happened. It was when I worked for Adam, when I was hairdressing, it was employed. That was, like you say, you just get a paycheck each week or month. As soon as I went into the men's division, it was commission or chair rent. That was all it was. And it's kind of, I think, over 10 to 15 years, that's just kind of how we've divulged into it. And maybe there is time for change and maybe it is what you need, because like you say, that recently it's become very apparent there is this gap in apprenticeships. And
it's just that bridge. That's all I'm really concerned about. And I can't seem to get an answer. I can't clear it in my head and how we get past that.
Yeah.
You know, and as you say, you know, commission, you know, half of fuck all is still fuck all. You know, chair rental, you know, if you're £50 a day out, you could be losing 50 quid a day.
It's the only
thing.
It's
even worse, you know. So, yeah, it's just that start point. There's definitely no incentive for the employer. There's no incentive for the store owner.
think the only incentive as a commission base, this is my sort of take from it. I start on commission with obviously next to no clientele, and that put a rocket up my ass. I was like, I need to get clientele. So I need to sell myself. I need to talk to people, leaflets. You try and get a kid to give out a leaflet now, they'll look at you like you're mad. They're like, I'm not going to advertise myself. That's what TikTok's for, or Instagram. Like, you know, I think there's a couple of old morals that are derived from being put in a position where you need to actually get going and try your hardest to build a clientele, which is a bit of desperation. Like, you know, being put on a commission basis with no clientele, starting off, you're like, right, how do I build this business? No different to, like, you know, if you start a shop up in the middle of nowhere, how do you build it? Like, it kind of lends itself to building a couple of, I suppose like essential skills, not only in cutting hair, but dealing with people, you know, making yourself, you know, more known amongst clientele, being in a shop, if it's busy, you know, speak to other clients that come through the door, you know, be a person that, like you said, be a person people want to talk to.
I get that. And I do think it's really interesting in that respect. And you said it, you know, and they're having their own business within your business. But are they promoting themselves? I remember being really kind of quite thrown with Liam, the mustache barber, who came in with us. And he did a 12-week course at London School of Barbering. And he said to me, he said, I managed to get a shop that would give me a chair. And I stood on the corner and started giving people flyers.
Wicked.
And I'm like, that's brilliant. And he said, nine out of 10 kind of looked at me as if I was weird, but one in 10 came in and I started building my clientele.
Kids now, younger people are quicker to promote something they have no association with than themselves. They'll put a picture up of their trainers, put a picture up of their hoodies or their car and tag the life out of them. But they won't put up a little video going, hi, I'm James. I'm new to here. I'm going to be cutting hair if you want to come in. And that, again, it comes back to social media, doesn't it? But I think we didn't have that. I didn't have that. I had to give out leaflets. I had to, you know, go into pubs and talk to people. I played a lot of football. I'd be playing on a Sunday league pitch and being like, hey, mate, where'd you get your haircut?
But both of you do that, though. I mean, you both have huge, you both have job titles that involve the word social media.
Yeah, yeah.
And both of you have a real clear persona on social media. They're both very clear about who you are, and you are, in essence, who you are on social media. You're quite clear about that. Is that unusual?
It's difficult.
I don't spend enough time. Or are you, selling old school?
Liam's a bit of a rarity. I've got a lot of time for Liam. I've spoke to him at shows, and what he's doing, he's not been in the industry that long, but the way he cuts hair, you'd think he's been in the industry for 10, 15 years, but he's fully immersed himself in it. He's gone to shows, he's modelled for people, he's built that network, he's connected with people, he's in a good shop, and he's kind of taken control of his own career. I don't know what he does, employment, commission, chairman, whatever he does, but he's kind of the epitome of how you should be when you come out of an apprenticeship, because he knows it's going to be hard work, but he's willing to put the work in. He's handing out flyers, he's promoting himself, he's going on courses, he's come down to WOW, and he's willing to put the work in to get the results. But regards to social media, it's like Wes said, I get more benefit from people that I don't know than my own mates. I get more likes of random people, and then I look through the people liked it, I think, people I've known 25 years aren't even liking these posts. And
wife don't even like them. So take it down now.
And I get it, they're not in the industry and stuff, but I think that's what the attraction is with social media, because you touched on it earlier, you get that instant validation. Mm. You put a post up, it gets X amount of views, X amount of likes, and then you chase it and you want more of it. And I think that's where modern day apprentices and young people in the industry are kind of getting lost, because we're chasing that next endorphin hit. We're going after, the attention spans are getting less. We want the more likes, more views, more people, more money. Whereas I think as business owners, we need to kind of strip it back, go back to old school and say, no, these are the traditions of cutting hair. I'm going to show you how to be a fucking good barber. Mm.
You can definitely transfer it. You can take the old morals and put them into a tool that is like Instagram or TikTok. You can still do the reaching out to people, whether it used to be a leaflet or just talking to people, going on, You know, we were like early days, we had Facebook, there were Facebook groups of local areas putting it out there going, hello, I'm a new barber in, I'm giving a 15% discount to any new people. I think young people can still do that and they need to remember that side of it. Mm. But there is, I mean, I always take, I don't know if I get his second name right, Dan Burnett. Yeah. Unbelievable turnaround. Obviously, he's gone into barbering.
He's really
older.
New to it, isn't he?
Just submerged himself into every aspect he possibly could with no mad, like, you know, this, you know, he weren't trying to do deals with clipper companies, he weren't trying to do deals with scissor companies or things like that. There's nothing wrong with that, but he weren't interested in that. He was just, I want to build up clientele, I'm going to be around people that I think, you know, can help me deliver that. And before you know, he's got his own shop and he's got a heavy clientele and an amount of years because he'd done all the moral things right of just reaching out to people and selling himself as a person before a barber. And then obviously his skills have grown. And said, your skills will develop, your people skills you need to work on. No, and that's why people jump in your chair.
I think we need to set expectations clear from the off as well.
Yeah.
Because it's, I always say to my apprentices and like the junior barbers that come in, that don't go into this job unless you enjoy it, because you can earn more money doing something much easier. Less graft, less hours. And it's, I think what's kind of happening, I love social media. I'm a big advocate for it. Yeah. I think it gets a lot of hate and a lot of slating, but if it's used as the right tool, it can affect your career exponentially. And I'm a big advocate for it. But I think what is happening then is people are coming out of apprentices and they're wanting to earn silly amounts of money from the off. And I think as owners, we need to sit down with the apprentices and say, you're not going to earn great for the first couple of years. You'll build up your clientele and then it's going to get better. And then it'll open itself up to opportunities. And that's when I think the employment model works. When you're not damaging limitation, but you're setting the expectations that they're not going to be millionaires overnight. It's going to take work. You're going to have to build your clientele. However, I'm going to support you during that process until you're ready to go off and earn a bit of chairing. But whether there's room for that and whether people are going to accept it, I don't know. But I think
that's what we'd get told, wouldn't it? Like the people who would train us would go, look, you know, it's not going to be great to start off with, but you can deliver yourself and build yourself up. Whereas, you know, you go back to Instagram stuff now, there's people putting videos up going, I'm 6 months out of college. Here's my 25 haircut a day.
This is how much I earn a cut.
This is how much I earn. And they're like, oh, I've earned 600 quid a day or whatever. And you're like, that is about as unrealistic as me being able to cut out my teeth. Like it just, it's ridiculous. But we can't change how people perceive stuff, like without everyone trying really. Because there's always going to be someone who put something up that is unachievable or unpractical. And that's always going to be the shinier thing that people look at. But I think as long as people like me and yourself, like try and be as honest as possible to people with our social medias, and explain why we do what we do, I feel like it only takes if one young person sees it and changes the way they want to do things, then it's worked. Mm. That makes sense.
And I think that's like you're saying, you touched on it earlier. It is kind of lifting the curtain on the Wizard of Oz and showing them what we've been through. And like, I'd probably would do things different if I started again, but that's what you learn from being in business. And it's, I think it is kind of dropping this facade of, oh, I live a great lifestyle, I'm a millionaire, I do this, and showing that, yeah, it sucks sometimes. Mm. I love the hair industry, I will never leave the hair industry. But there's been days where I thought about chucking a towel in, and I'm beyond grateful for the opportunities I'm getting now and the position I'm in. But there's some tough times of it, and I think that's what we need. It's for every video that gets put out that this is how much you earn a day, there should be another one that says, actually, you're only going to earn this.
Yeah.
And it's,
but I mean, you know, slider cuts is a great one for it because, you know, he's showing actually what most successful barbers are doing is, well, maybe not 5:30 in the morning, Mark, maybe not, but most of us are doing a proper shift and we're standing behind a chair and we're cutting hair and we're working. Yeah. And that is essentially the job.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the whole, is the job. Do you get someone, one of your clients or something, go, oh, you know, what's your day look like today? I'm like, yeah, I'm here till 8:00. Like, oh, what time do you start? I'm like, I was here at 8:00. They're like, why? Mm. Like, why so long? Because that's generally the sort of hours we do and stuff. I don't think people are actually giving that sort of information back to the young people, and they just think you go and do a 9 till 5 and earn loads of money. But if you want to be in a certain sort of position or do okay, you have got to push yourself to do probably quite abnormal hours. But that side is, like I said, not many people are peeking behind the curtain and getting to
see that. It's establishing them goals early as well, isn't it? Like if you take an apprentice on and you know that they want to become a session stylist or they want to work on film sets or with brands, I think that's the opportunity from the off is to kind of hit that road path from the off, because like my business partner, he doesn't want to do any of that. He wants to cut hair behind the chair 5 days a week, as many haircuts as he can, which is brilliant for a shop. It's what the till owe, it's what the till needs, what clients need. Whereas to keep someone engaged and be willing to accept the payment they're earning in the early days, I think it's showing them that progression. And it's our job as owners to set that clear standard. So go through them and sit down. Like you used to get when you were at school, you'd get career counsellors. Sit down and plan their next 5 years out, 10 years out, and create an environment where they're willing to put the work in, because the payoff is going to be worth it. It's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to be a 5 minute wonder, but you put the work in now and you'll reap the rewards later on.
I mean, that certainly would make sense to start including that in the kind of college curriculum, so that, you know, there's an understanding from their point of view that there's a...
Well, they come out of college and don't know what they want to do. They just know how to cut hair. Mm. They don't know where in the industry they want to go. Like I say, until I got focused on what I wanted to do, and that was to have my own shop, to work with Wattle, I was just turning up every day cutting hair and earning a bit of money. But it's very easy to lose that passion then, because it's not going driven into anything. And it's as soon as I figured out what path I wanted to go down, the passion went through the roof again. Yeah. And it's... I almost didn't really care what I was earning, because I was loving the process so much. And I think you'd get good enough at doing something, the money will come eventually.
I think, a lot of people as well on that, it's the expectations thing. They're seeing haircuts online, and when they're starting off and they're getting their first bunch of clientele, it might be kids. It might not necessarily be the haircuts they're wanting to do, but it's building up your key foundations, you know, your clipper over combs, your scissor over combs, things like that. And I've had it where younger people have been in, and because they're not doing skin faded faux hawks or burst fades with every haircut, they're like, oh, I don't know if this is for me. Mm. And you think, how do you manage that expectation of the work that you need to deliver in order to be a better barber and to build up the core foundation, which might not necessarily be your exotic haircuts, but they're essential as opposed to what they're actually going to be doing. Like, I think that's something that I don't know whether they talk about it in colleges. I know they didn't when I was there. It was, you cut hair. You just cut hair. You keep cutting hair.
I mean, I always got taught it. You had the silver pound, didn't you? Whereas I've got boys that come to me once a week. They've got four hairs left on their head, but they give me the best conversations I ever get in the shop. And they're your regulars. They come in, they'll pay you every time. They sit in your chair. They take 15, 20 minutes. And arguably, they're a more loyal client than someone who's coming in and getting a burst fade so you can put them on Instagram. And it's...
But we've certainly got that now. I mean, in a good way. And I think that's probably what's attracting an awful lot of younger people to it.
Yeah.
Is, you know, for decades, we've seen women's hair commented on the red carpet at film premieres.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, men's haircuts talked about. You look in magazines, there's men hair. There are men's fashion haircuts. There are haircuts on men with a name.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's been this huge changeover. You know, prior to that, you went to the barber and you got your haircut.
Yeah.
And it was the barber that essentially decided how you wanted your haircut.
Yeah.
And if you wanted it cut differently, you went to a different barber. And that was the kind of game.
This is answering kind of what you were saying earlier about finding the money to employ people. It's kind of, do we need to reinvent how men's stylists are seen now? Because there isn't traditional barbers. Well, there is still traditional barbers. But now you've got this hybrid where female styling and men's haircuts have got put together. Yeah. Like we spoke earlier, like Josh, he was one of the first people to do it mainstream on social media, doing haircuts that traditional barbers wouldn't even know how to tackle, because you're taking the elements of female hairdressing, all the technical aspects of that very Sassoon kind of based, and mixing it in with the traditional techniques of barbering. And it's now, like, it's always been the way, isn't it? You go to a hair salon to get your haircut as a man, you're paying 50, 60, 70 pound a haircut.
Yep.
You go to a barber shop, anything 25, 30 pound up is extortionate. Mm. And it's kind of, how do we kind of tackle that? Because I think if you could break that mold, the income for the shop then goes up. It then gives you more expendable income to spend on apprentices, education.
I mean, that's the big bit. Like you're saying, you know, our overheads have gone up, everything has gone up, and people's earnings want to go up. Mm. And the only way you can do that is to increase the price. You know, when I was younger and getting haircuts properly, and certainly as a kid, didn't have shiny espresso machines and a barber's. You didn't get the offer of a beer. You certainly had no one that took your coat. You know, that was it. If you were lucky, there was a 14-year-old magazine on the table, and that was it. But all the extras have been added to it. Yeah. I still don't think that, you know, every time we bring price up here, we get a barrage of people that it's like, you're insane.
Touchy subject.
It's like, but, you know, I don't know why you won't class a haircut like that. And as barbers ourselves, we're still quite reticent to put our prices.
You need to identify what separates a hairdresser to a barber, don't you? Like, what's different than, and I don't want to offend any hairdressers out there, but you're arguably, you are getting a better haircut for most barbers now than a woman stylist cutting a man's hair.
Yep.
And it's, so the only deprivation and the disparity there is the service.
Mm.
Whether that's like you say, a coffee, you get a hair wash, it's a nicer environment. Mm. You go in there, you're not paying for the haircut, you're paying for everything that comes with it.
But you used to kind of, I think when you went to the barbers, it was mainly a clipper haircut. And if you wanted a longer, more fashionable haircut, you went to a salon.
Yeah.
And I think that was the divide.
It was always time focused, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was always,
and you don't get that now. You know,
the barbershop I started in, we were doing 15-minute haircuts.
Yeah.
And you know, that weren't abnormal. That was quite comfortable,
right?
And you didn't even think about it. Hairdressers would charge, I don't know, anywhere upwards. They'd be doing 30-minute upward services for a quick cut on a wet cut to a blow dryer, and then obviously colours, etc. So the price difference kind of made more sense in that sort of respect. But then, I suppose ignorantly, it was seen as a skill set, a different skill set as well, and people thought that hairdressers were more skillful than men's barbers because it was a simpler skill to use.
Well,
in
I think
the barber.
And the expectation was much lower. Mm. I mean, you know, men, you know, the client's expectation now.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Is incredibly high. I mean,
if
you
I
know,
don't make someone look like an AI generated picture of David Beckham,
I mean, that's
I'm,
what
I'm
you
rubbish.
Get. I mean, you know, I don't think I have a single guy, certainly, you know, when we get new guys in the store that haven't got half a dozen pictures on their phone that I want to flick through.
Yeah.
And we're fighting the filter.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, look, even his hair doesn't look like that.
We used to have a
but
book.
But that expectation's really high.
The beautiful thing with a book back in the day or a magazine is you'd only ever see the haircut from the front.
Yeah.
So you could just be like, yeah, cool. We pretty much just leave the back. Or you know, you'd save time. Now people have got 360s of everything. It's a lot more engaging, a lot more involvement.
We need to be confident in what we're doing as well, because we've had it when we've put, it's the old trap, isn't it? We put our price up £2 a time and it's like, no, like we need to reinvent the service. This is what we're going to do. It's going to be X amount.
Mm.
I'd love to keep you as a client. This is what I'm going to be charging
now. We are people pleasers. It's all we've ever been. I'm still in the same thing where if anyone tips me, I say, are you sure?
Mm. Yeah, that's
why
what the boys in the shop do.
They
go, oh,
are you sure?
Just you know, it's gone up £2. And instantly, that's then, they're thinking, oh, God, I'm getting ripped off. If you just say, this is how much it is today, and it's having confidence in your own ability and something that we're pushing in the shop at the moment and something that as a barber shop has kind of not held up against hairdressers for years is retail.
Mm.
And it's something that, it should make up a good portion of your income, should come through retail. And I think we're very guilty of it as barbers. We kind of spend all the time on the skin fades and the cut and make it look good. And then we kind of chuck a bit of product in. We don't educate our clients on what we're doing with it and why we're doing it. And that's where the sales and the income is going to come from. And it's, even from my perspective, working with Wild, like I should be putting clippings in people's hands, trimmers, hair dryers, straight, like there's a whole market there that we kind of don't look down because we've been classed as barbers for so many years. You go in a hairdresser.
It's the people pleasing side of it because you don't want to put that hard sell on your customer deem as
but
a mate.
The biggest disappointment, I read somewhere that the biggest disappointment for clients is not being able to achieve their look at home.
Well, it's not a good haircut unless they can recreate it.
And
it?
You kind of go, well, you can't if you haven't used, you know, I've put this and this on it and you're giving it a quick bash over with Bulldog's shampoo for men.
£2 Tesco gel.
Straight through the head. Excellent, boys. It's been a joy talking to you. I guess the future of apprentices is a bit Jurassic Park. I'm sure they will find, nature will find a way. Young barbers will find a way.
Clones.
I like, oh, I wish. That'd terrify me. It's been really enjoyable. I really like that a lot. Thank you very much.
Thank
really
you.
Appreciate your time. And
thank you very much.
And I've been Anthony Levan, and that's been the Noble Barber podcast. See you soon.
Welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch and come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode and we'll see you next time.